Vodka o'clock.
Hey everyone, and welcome to a special episode of Vodka O'Clock. I'm Amber Love from AmberUnmasked.com. What you're about to hear is the second half of the Kickstarter panel at the New York Special Edition Comic-Con. It took me a whole lot longer to get to New York than I thought, so I walked in late, but I still wanted to make sure that I got you some information about Kickstarter, because it's obviously a really go-to way to fund independent comics and other projects these days. And on the panel was Greg Pak, that's who's speaking when the recording first picks up, and Amy Chu, who's an independent comic writer, and then two folks who actually work for Kickstarter, Craig and Jamie. So give it a listen. Hopefully you can still glean some of the information out of it. And if you have any questions about Kickstarter, they have their own email address where you just write comics@kickstarter.com, and Jamie is the one who actually fields all of those inquiries. So give it a listen and let me know what you think. And I will have a couple more episodes from the Special Edition New York Comic Con coming your way. I just want to warn you that there is some like really strange background noise, and I'm not sure why that is, but it's actually in the recording file, so it's not something that I can figure out how to get out because I didn't compress the files or anything. But I think you can still hear the voices pretty well if you could just tolerate any of that background noise. I was sitting in the back row, so maybe that had something to do with it.
An audience. If you think you have an audience, you can reach them directly. The disadvantage is you're doing all of the work. When you do a comic through Kickstarter, you're not just writing and drawing the comic, which is generally what we do in work for hire. We're only doing one piece of that. You're doing everything. You know, you're editing, you are doing the publicity, you're project managing the whole thing and making sure everybody's meeting their deadlines. You're working with the printer, you're dealing with shipping and handling, and you have signed up to do customer service. And that's a hugely important part of it. You know, when you are doing, you can't be proud at all. You have to be willing just to directly communicate with all of your backers, anybody who has a question. And the bigger your project gets, or the more backers you get, the more questions you're going to have. And you have to cheerfully, and you have to be the kind of person who's willing to embrace that and answer questions and be upfront about any problems you have and deal with it. And it takes a huge amount of time. I had a friend named Jamal Eigel who did a Kickstarter for a book called Molly Danger, and I asked him for advice beforehand. He said, I asked him how much time it took during the campaign. He said, probably about 6 hours a day. And I was like, yeah, whatever. During the actual campaign, I was easily spending 6 hours a day on the campaign itself. Not every campaign necessarily works that way. If the campaign starts to take off, it can, and if you decide that you're going to feed that by adding more stretch goals and rewards and things like that, then it can become all-consuming. On the other hand, if you've got a project, and if you have that opportunity, if it feels right, if you have the time, and if you can handle it, go for it. At the same time, I think there's a huge amount of value in deciding, I need just this much money to do the project, and I'm not going to go crazy with stretch goals. I'm just going to get, you know, if I hit that, that's going to be awesome, and I'm going to make it.
Hey Greg, you want to explain what a stretch goal is?
Yeah. So let's, what happened with us was we had a goal of $39,000. That was to do a 60-page comic book where everybody was going to get paid. That was a big, important thing for us, was to make sure everybody got their rate, all the different people who worked on the book. $39,000 was the minimum we could figure in order to do that. And we were just crossing our fingers hoping we were going to make it. And we ended up making that in the first 8 hours, which was nuts. So then a stretch goal is, okay, if we make, like our first stretch goal we planned for was $59,000, because we budgeted this whole thing out. We figured if we hit $59,000, we could expand the length of the book from 60 pages, I think, to 80 pages. And then if you think you're going to reach certain levels, or if you have a shot to reach certain levels, you create these stretch goals that allow it. And in the end, we were able to expand the book to 104 pages. We added a bunch of other little stories done by other artists based on songs of Jonathan's. We added a whole acoustic album that Jonathan was going to record with all the songs that he was going to get for free. It was crazy what we were able to add on. But you don't have to do that.
Yeah, you may not want to
I mean, the big thing is you're doing the project in order to do the project.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and I have no regrets about the way it ran. It's been awesome, and everything that we added was something that I wanted to physically hold in my hand and cut it. You know what I mean? We added t-shirts, we added challenge coins, we added mugs, and folks were very excited to pledge for those, and that was great. We were smart enough not to add a bunch of things that would create a lot of extra creative work for us. I think Amanda Palmer famously had a thing where she was going to paint record players as a reward for a Kickstarter thing that she did, which is awesome. I mean, to get a painted record player from Amanda Palmer sounds really cool, but that meant that she had to paint however many record players that was in the end and mail those out to people, you know, so.
Yeah, that's like the thing that sounds great when you're like, oh, I hope 10 people do that, right? And then when like 1,000 people do it, you're like, oh my God, I'm painting record player. Like, I'll tell this sort of great story and then we can also open up to questions. But before I worked at Kickstarter, I happened to go to a Kickstarter and comics panel. And I forget the guy's campaign, but he won $10,000 and he got $114,000. And everyone said, oh my God, that's amazing. And he said, it's the worst thing that ever happened to me. And I'm like, oh my God, why? You won a 10,000 and you got 100,000. He's like, well, all that money just went into printing more books. And he said, one day a Mack truck or a semi-truck pulled up in front of my house and the guy said, I've got 8 pallets of comics. Where do you want me to put them? And he literally didn't have room in his apartment for the amount of comics that he, you know, he never really thought about. Like, he was more like, well, you know, I might be able to make the thing and I'll get whatever, 100 issues. And now he was like saying, like, he was calling friends and they would drive up in their cars and he'd hand them comics and they'd take them to their apartments. He felt like a drug dealer on the street, you know. And he said, you know, he basically ended up doing nothing but shipping comics for 3 months. He said he got up at like 5 in the morning, shipped comics for 2 hours, and then went to work and then came back and shipped comics because it was so wildly successful. That's a good thing to happen, and you know, like in retrospect, I think now that he did it once, because this is many years ago, and this is like people are just figuring it out, right? It's not like there's a set way to do this. Like every campaign kind of adds to the knowledge base of what's gone before. And he said something very interesting on the panel. Someone said, "Would you ever do a Kickstarter again?" He's like, "No, it totally ruined my life." And then he goes, "Yeah, I'm actually going to do one in 6 months." You know, he figured it out. You know, but you know, like the one thing I can tell everyone is you kind of have to have 3 plans in place, right? One of the plans is, what happens if you meet your goal? Can you do the thing on time? Can you get it out? Okay, what happens if you're not meeting your goal? What is your plan? And then also, what happens if your goal is wildly exceeded? Because people start adding stretch goals, and then they realize, oh, I can't really fulfill them, or, you know, like LeVar Burton has just booked up dinner for the next 7 years of his life, you know, things like that. So, you know, just kind of have a couple plans in place for that.
Of that 6 hours I was spending today during the campaign, at least 2 to 3 of that was spent in Microsoft Excel, working on different budgets, you know what I mean, and checking and rechecking as we added stretch goals to make sure.
Nothing as exciting as spreadsheets.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was lucky because Jonathan not only wrote the song Code Monkey, he is a code monkey. I mean, he worked as a computer programmer, so he had his own spreadsheets going. I had mine, and we compared. At one point, we compared it all, and this was very late in the game when the budgets were up, you know, really high, and we were within $500 from each other, and we were like, that's insane. You know, so we were very happy. But,
you also talk for, like, I know I said we don't want to talk too much about it, but can you guys talk about for 2 minutes about shipping, because that's really important, especially in this category. But then, well, I said we'll talk a lot about it, but we'll talk a couple minutes about shipping.
Yeah, I'll just run really quick. Just take a package that you think is going to weigh what your actual shipment will weigh. Actually make a package, go to the post office, weigh it for domestic, local in your area, for across the country, and then for like Japan and Canada.
Australia.
Well. Yeah, and so you, and then when you are, and then add 10% to 20% on top of that. In order to figure out what your shipping costs are. And then think about what happens if you end up, like maybe if you have 100 backers, you can do it all by yourself. If you have 2,000 backers, you may want to go with a fulfillment house. Call a fulfillment house while you're planning. Also, take 2 months to plan your thing before you launch. There's no rush, you know what I mean? Take your time. Call a fulfillment house. A fulfillment house is a company you're basically paying money in order to ship out stuff. You know what I mean? So we work with a fulfillment house called Echo Data in Delaware. And we had all of our junk shipped to them, so it didn't have to show up on our back steps, although we did have some stuff show up, and yes, it was crazy. But It got shipped to them. They ended up they ship out all the packages. They and then we paid them for that. But we factored that into our budget from the beginning so that we didn't get shafted in the end. You know, so just factor it all in the beginning and then add 10 to 25% so you don't get screwed on shipping. Also because shipping U.S. postage goes up in January every year.
Oh right, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so keep it all in mind. You know, and also
international shipping always costs more than you think. Yeah. There have been a couple projects where when they sort of factored in international shipping, they basically were either breaking even or not really where they needed to be because they didn't expect. You know, they didn't go to the post office, they didn't check the rates, and you're like, what? It costs $45 to ship a $10 book to Australia? That's insane. But you want to know that ahead.
Yeah. Your success is all in the planning. I mean, your Kickstarter is not successful till all your stuff gets out and to the folks in Australia who bought your book. That's basically it. So you need to plan that out. And you don't not to, to, you know, don't get scared off by Greg. Like you, if you don't have 6 hours a day to do this, you don't need 6 hours. You need 6 hours if you have a $340,000 Kickstarter. You know, my Kickstarter, you know, I'm not even sure how long it took, but it was manageable, you know?
Amy, I was talking to Amy. She'd already done a Kickstarter, and I started working Kickstarter. I was like, have you ever thought about doing another one? She goes, oh, yeah, I've been thinking about doing another one. And then the next morning, she sends me an email. And she goes, oh, I just launched the Kickstarter. And I was like, what?
You can do this.
You were on the verge, you know? And she was like, yeah, I got up at 5 in the morning and shot my video. I'm like, didn't you?
Yeah. Hopefully none of you saw that video. But, you know, because he made me do the video. And here's the thing about video. I think a video is successful because it shows that you got your stuff together. And also, some people only watch the video. I didn't realize this.
Yeah.
Some people only read the text, and some people will not read. They just want to watch the video. So that's why you need to have a video.
It's kind of funny because I have both.
I almost never watch the video.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, projects, there's the success rate of, it's like your project is something like 20 or 40% more likely to be successful if you have a video.
Yeah, I would be a little suspicious if there wasn't a video. But
yeah.
I don't watch it.
I was not that comfortable doing a video, but I did it. And here's the tip. When you do the video, do a short video.
Yes, short.
People will not watch the whole thing. You start going on and on and on, unless it's super entertaining.
We recommend about 2 minutes for a video.
Not even a minute. You know?
It can be really short. That's cool. But I would say, I always encourage people to put themselves in the video, too. You don't have to. Like, there are a lot of, you know, sort of really highly produced, like, trailers with artwork for the comic or something, but even just like a moment when you say hello and introduce yourself, like people will respond to you as much as they do to the comic.
Yeah, they respond to your passion. You know, I think that's one thing. Like talk about what excites you about the project. Because what excites you about the project is what's going to get someone else excited about the project.
I think the reason Kickstarter works, because people will spend more money on your comic book via Kickstarter than they ever would in a store.
Yeah.
So true.
You know what I mean? And it's because I think there are a couple of things. One, because you're part of a story when you donate to a Kickstarter. You know, when you contribute. You're making it happen, and that's an exciting thing. And then just the process of it happening is an exciting thing. It's like eBay. Everybody in this room has bought something on eBay they never would have bought at a garage sale. You know what I mean? And
paid more money for it.
And then there's entertainment value in the process of bidding for it and competing for it, right? In the same way, there's entertainment value in Kickstarter just being part of all this. Also, it's personal. I mean, when you're doing a Kickstarter, you're interacting with the folks who are backing you, and that's, I think there's a real value to that. And so putting yourself in your video, you know, doing those updates, I was nervous about updates. I was like, how many updates should I do? And then at a certain point, I realized, you know, people sign on board because they want to support.
Yeah, because they want to hear from you.
And if they don't want the updates, they can click the button where they don't get the updates. But we, you know, I think updating is, you know, don't do it if you don't have news or if you don't have something you're talking to folks about. But that kind of interaction is what people are buying into.
But when you're making a comic, you always have something to share. You can, I mean, comics are so shareable.
Yeah.
Like, you
yeah.
share artwork
yeah.
in progress, you know. Greg was fortunate to have a great singer-songwriter as part of the project. Like, they do a signing in a store, and Jonathan performs, we post a video of the performance. You know, I mean, these are just a couple of examples, but you're always working on something. It's so easy to share the creative process with comics, and I find those are the updates that I really like, where someone is not just telling me what's happening like monetarily with their project, but like involving me in what's actually being created. I think that's the most exciting part.
So I'm curious, how many of you here have actually supported a Kickstarter?
Oh yeah.
Awesome. There
See,
we go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And how many of you have actually run a Kickstarter?
Ooh.
Okay.
That's not bad.
Yeah, I think it's also smart if you're thinking about, I mean, I'm preaching to the crowd here, but if you're going to launch a Kickstarter, it's a good idea to back some Kickstarters.
Yeah, and so to look at success.
Yeah, just think about what you like when you're thinking about what you want to offer.
But
it may sound obvious, but some people won't.
Why don't we open up to see if there's any questions?
Well, let me just say something really quickly, just to save yourself some time, because I'm kind of like a geek in this way. But if you were already on Kickstarter, look at other successful Kickstarters for comics. If you're doing a comics Kickstarter, you will save yourself a lot of grief and planning. Look at what's successful and what's not successful, and then you can just take some learnings from that before you actually launch yours, because it'll help you out a lot.
Absolutely. Question all the way in the back.
Yes, in terms of production, is it cheaper to do a web comic than is a print comic? I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, production, is it cheaper to do a web comic than a print comic?
Digital's always cheaper than print.
Yeah, because you're not, the printing, printing is expensive. I mean, it gets less expensive the more you print, you know what I mean? Like the average copy, the price per copy is going to go down. But also, if you're doing a Kickstarter and you're going to give people a reward, yes, people will sign on to get a digital reward if they like it. But I think for comics, I think having a physical copy for comics is pretty important.
I think this is why the comics category is so strong on Kickstarter, and why comics are such a natural fit, is because people who read comics want to hold their comics in their hands. Like, I definitely always encourage people, don't forget digital. It's a great way to be able to, like, even offer someone who's pledging like a tiny amount, it's not like a real valuable reward, because it doesn't really cost you anything to deliver a digital reward. Just send them a link, you know, or whatever, somewhere they can download it. Print costs money, but I mean, that's why people back comics projects, because they want to see these comics happen, and it can be hard to, you know, to get your book published otherwise.
Yeah, and that's a really good point when you think about digital and physical rewards, because digital rewards like are the easiest rewards to, you know, distribute. You're not mailing it out. And, you know, think of things like, okay, maybe for if you want to charge, I'm gonna make up numbers, like $20 for your comic, the print version, you know, maybe you get the digital version at $10, but at $5 maybe you get like the digital version of the script, you know what I mean, something like that. So, you know, think of creative stuff and try to think of rewards that are both interesting to the person that they're getting it, but also not necessarily super, super hard for you.
I've definitely had projects where I get, like, you know, a digital copy of the book for like $3 or something. And that's a real reward. Like, I get to read a comic and I get to support more projects because I had these options. Like, you know, I might not have, I don't know if I want to spend $20 on this, but $3, I definitely want to read this comic. You know, think of all those options.
You have a question?
Yeah. So you mentioned a few ways to really make a successful Kickstarter, such as, you know, success rate at where you want it, not where you need it, not where you want it, and, you know, 5% rewards, etc. Aside from some of these other things, are there any other suggestions you may have for having your Kickstarter not really fall through the cracks and make people really see it and support it ultimately?
I mean, and these guys can talk a lot about that, but the one thing I would say is a Kickstarter starts with your personal network, right? So somebody who doesn't know anybody out there and just kind of hopes that people will find it, generally that's a tougher sell unless it's a super cool project. You know, a lot of people are very smart about, like, well, you know, like, I'm friends with Jamie, and Jamie has 600 followers on Twitter, so I'll ask Jamie, and they'll actually have talked to people ahead of time and say, hey, I'm going to launch on whatever it is, July 1st, and would you be able to tweet about it? I think the people are becoming very savvy about that because they realize that getting a good start on Kickstarter is really helpful for a number of reasons. You know, you sort of get momentum, people sort of see that other people have done it. So, you know, talk about use your own, you know, your own social network, both in real life and, you know, online. And then also think about a lot of people now, I've noticed, have some portion of the book done, and then will go to a comic book news site, and actually, you know, they'll like post like a three-page preview of the Kickstarter launching, whatever, you know. So people are kind of even coming up with pre-launch strategies, but I think these guys are actually the experts at it.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have a different strategy depending on sort of where you are in building your career, you know. In our case, both Jonathan and I have been, you know, I've been making comics for about 10 years. He's been doing music for 7 or 8 years publicly. And we both built up both a certain fan base, a certain number of social media followers, And we also had, we each had a pretty good chunk of contacts in press with people who, you know, journalists and bloggers and folks like that. So we figured out a little strategy ahead of time where we reached out to all of our press contacts. And the funny thing was that we had a lot of people who knew us both, you know what I mean, who'd written about us separately, which was great because then we come to them and say, hey, we're doing this project together, and that's a whole new hook for them. I mean, part of it is just, I mean, with any independent project, you are competing, I mean, the crazy thing is, you're out there competing against, you know, X-Men, you know what I'm saying, in terms of pop culture, you know, I mean, that's crazy, but that's sort of the reality of it. So it's like, what makes your project different and distinct, and what media can you go to, you know, that's going to care about it? In our case, you know, we had, like, we got covered by... Both Jonathan and I have done stuff that in the tech community got a little bit of attention, you know, so we got covered by, like Andy Anatko wrote about us for one of the tech sites that he writes for, because, I mean, the book is about a coding monkey,
yeah.
And I mean, I've done a few sci-fi things that were very tech-oriented, and Jonathan has a big fan base, you know what I mean? So, and then the fact that it was a musician and a comic book writer coming together to do a project was a little different, you know what I mean? So anything that you have that makes your project a little different, find out what that niche media is that you can talk about.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's a lot of projects that naturally overlap into several categories. Like my friends who did the action figures for girls, they had sort of the mommy blogger contingent, right? Because they're doing like basically action figures for girls made by girls. They had the collector community, they had the comic book community, and they were very smart about knowing, you know, they kind of analyzed their project and they didn't know that. Like, that's not why they did it, but they kind of looked at all the different types of people, and so they reached out to all those communities as well. And a lot of times, comic books, you know, will cross over, like, you know, Code Monkey, for instance, you know, that crossed naturally into the tech community. Anything about that?
Yeah, I would say leverage social media as much as you can. Not all of us have press contacts, but social media is free. Get on Twitter, get on Facebook. When he showed that chart of like how your campaign is going to go, it's really more like you tweet and it goes up and then it like plateaus and then you tweet again and it goes up. You got to do that. The campaigns that I saw that didn't do as well basically didn't really do anything. This is like, kind of like feeding taking care of a pet. You know, you need to like, you know.
Don't starve your pet.
Don't starve your pet. Don't forget about them. If you just don't do anything for a while, you'll notice, oh my gosh, I didn't get any new pledges. It's just that you know, you need to put some effort into it. And sad to say, but this is the way it goes for any project. It's like 25% of your time will be actually dedicated to actually doing the project. The rest of the time, you gotta like, you know, basically market it. And, you know, these, if you're a happy skills, great. If not, it's time to learn. You know, you gotta get on Facebook. And don't just talk it up like it's my project, this and that. Talk it up in an interesting way because you're talking to an audience. You know, I can't tell you. I think I backed like 79 Kickstarters. You know, because I think it's fun. I like it, and like it's a great way for me to kind of shop and support. But so yeah, my email box is full of updates and like people like, you know. Try to be yourself. You have your own voice. Find your own voice when you're marketing your stuff. Don't be annoying. Just say, this is not a commercial transaction between you and me. I'm supporting you because I want to hear what you're doing, not because you think that you need to be somebody else, like you need to market like Microsoft. That's not you, and that's not what Kickstarter is about. You know, be true to yourself and try to build your fan base. It's not just about getting the money. Build your fan base by using Kickstarter and treat it that way.
Yeah, I love that we have both ends of the spectrum here. I mean, unfortunately, there's no real shortcut to just like, this is what will make you get more followers. Like, you know, especially if you're starting small, most of the people that support you will be people you know.
But that's exactly where you start.
That's exactly. It's great to start there. And, you know, it'll be a small percentage of people that are total strangers that somehow found your project, but there will be a small percentage. And if you make a great project that's compelling to the people you know, they'll be like, this is cool. And they'll tell other people, like, it's very... You know, it's hard work. It's, you know, there's no real shortcut, but it definitely does work. Or you could go make great work publicly for a decade and have a fan
base. Yeah, you already have
that built in. But I mean, that's putting in the work. Well, just the same.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, anybody who is, you know, like Jonathan and I started off with nothing. like none of us come from the entertainment industry. You know what I mean? Like we were not. It's the exact same thing. We were talking to our friends. We were like making little hundred. I was making little $100 or $200 short films, taking them to film festivals, going and meeting people, collecting email addresses whenever I could. You know, back before MySpace. You know what I mean? I was just working with email addresses and be shameless about like putting, you know, going to whatever events you have. That's where your stuff is being shown and making friends. The other big thing,
other creators too. One of the great things, and we were talking at dinner last night about how Amy is the master of this. But meeting other creators is a really great. Like when you're here, if you have a project, like show someone your project, not to get them to back it, just show it to them because it's cool.
Yeah, about 10 minutes. Really quickly. Okay, I know there is a tendency to say, "Oh, please retweet my project." It's actually not that effective unless the person is actually liking your stuff. So if you're just begging people for a retweet, it actually doesn't do as well as someone like Greg, who actually is like, "Oh my God, this is the best thing. Please support my friend's project." That's the level you want to get to. Don't just go around asking for retweets because they actually don't do that well for you.
Yeah, you want somebody who cares. You know what I mean? Like, and here's the thing. I mean, this is the way I always think about it. But from back in the day when I was self-distributing my feature film Robot Stories, you never know who has 100 friends who's going to show up at the movie theater. I mean, like, you know, like, there are people, sometimes we'd be playing in some tiny little city somewhere. This was with my feature film, Robot Stories, which we self-distributed. And because I'd reached out to all these folks and gotten email addresses from people in New York, folks emailed their friends in Cambridge. And we ended up having, like, you know, some guy brought his, I can't remember what it was like his class, like brought a classroom of people, 20 people to a screen, which was huge for us, you know what I mean? And that's the thing, it's like, your cousin may actually end up having like 12 friends who back your project, you know what I mean? So start with who you know, and start small. I mean, I was making tiny little short films, you know what I mean? Like when you start small, you can actually finish something. I had a teacher and a professor in film school who was always like, "This is not Japic." He was talking about our, at NYU, we were doing these short films and everybody's like, he's like, "This is not your epic. Don't, you know, like, just make this project. Don't put, you know, like, don't try to make a feature film in your first year of film school. Make these short films and just really enjoy it and build, you know, build yourself and build your audience."
All right, there's a lot of questions, so we're going to do the lightning round. So you go. Yes, go.
Yes, I'm interested in how to use the international following. It sounds like you can get backers from any country in the world.
Yeah, there's been backers from, I think it's like 240 countries. I actually pulled that slide out here, and I will leave it in there, including Antarctica.
If I want to do like bilingual editions, do you have localized Kickstarters? Like
no, we don't have localization right now. Usually what happens is people will just, I was literally just working with someone from Spain doing a project, and they kind of do a version in English, and then they say, "Click here," and it'll get to the, they duplicate it.
You can just list, put both on the page. Unfortunately, you kind of have to do it manually.
It's manual right now. Yeah. Next question. Go.
How did you go about protecting your IP? Did you copyright and patent yourself before you put it online where it went to see, or did you do that quickly to the price point of the Kickstarter, or did you take care of that and factor out all?
Copyright is cheap. You just submit. You know, I mean, you can just submit through the copyright office. You can just put your. I mean, honestly, probably most comic book creators are just, you know, if you just put, I mean, talk to a lawyer, you know what I mean? But if you put copyright on there, it's copyright, you know what I mean? When you actually register it as a copyrighted thing with the U.S. Copyright Office, you get extra rights, and you can, I think you can claim more damages if somebody infringes.
Honestly, I wouldn't worry too much about it. Go online, and once you publish, and it's technically copyrighted, okay? More than likely, if someone's going to pirate it, they're going to pirate it anyway. If you're worried about someone stealing your idea, you know.
Get your idea out there is more important.
Yeah, once you get it out, it's published and you're protected, and then you can go through whatever else you feel like you need to do it, you know.
If you're just starting out, piracy is not your problem, discovery is.
Lightning round, go.
How much should you consider for taxes?
That's going to depend on your locality.
Definitely talk to an accountant.
Talk to your accountant, but more than likely, honestly, most people lose money doing their own projects, so you're not going to have to worry about it if you do.
The good news is, if you
are very diligent in tracking your expenses, you know, more than likely, you don't have to worry about this. It would be, I think it technically would be considered capital gains or whatever if that actually happened, but I just don't know that that actually happens all that often. What you should be careful about is a cash flow tax issue, that if you raise a big chunk of money by the end of the year, but you don't fulfill it till the next tax year, you could have a problem there because it's going in your previous year taxes, but you can't offset it by the expenses, if that makes sense to you.
That means 5 minutes talking.
And also, I just want to point out, Kickstarter doesn't actually give tax advice because it is so different and this is new, but there is a guide that you can present to your account. So if you go on Kickstarter, like look at the
FAQ, search taxes,
there's a long list of like different facts, give that to your account, they'll be able to
like
give you a good answer.
Other than massively overreaching your goal, are there any major pitfalls or missteps that you've seen contribute to a failed campaign?
Yeah, underestimating costs of rewards.
A failed campaign in that it didn't reach its goal, or
right.
that they didn't make the thing. Not reaching the goal.
Or goal.
Right.
Not reaching the goal tends to primarily just be not reaching enough people with the thing, or you know sometimes the project just isn't something that a lot of people. But
so really quickly, there's some people who have run campaigns that have not been truthful and have been exposed. You know, your reputation is out there, so you know that's one thing you got to watch out for. Is run it in an ethical manner and. You know, a failed campaign is not a big deal. You can always restart, but how you conduct your campaign is reflective of you as a person, and that's out there publicly. So that's what I would watch out for.
And by the way, there's almost 100% success rate for people who fail their project and relaunch it.
And just to tag on there, almost all projects end up shipping slightly late. But overestimate how long it's going to take, and be honest every step of the way with your backers.
Communication is everything.
Yeah,
communication. Lightning round. Questions. Lady in the back.
Hi. I was just wondering why some content that's mature and adults only gets approved and some get rejected, because like the Oh Joy sex toy graphic novel was resounding success, but other mature content products get rejected.
That's a good question. That's a tough one to answer. I mean, you know, deciding what is offensive or not is, that's so subjective. I would say that our policy is very, very liberal in general. As long as it's not like of a really extreme, like hateful nature, we generally, you know, accept it.
Lightning round. Who else? I saw like 20 hands before. Go.
What would be the best time frame to set for the Kickstarter for a comic? 30 days, 60 days?
There is no best time frame. The average is 30 days, but we don't know if that's because that works the best or it just became the average because it's 30 days. I don't know, Jamie.
Whatever length you choose, your funding will probably be pretty similar. So, I mean, you could even do like a really fast 2-week campaign and have it all, you know, shoved into that tiny time period, or spread like the difference between 30 and 60 days, which is the maximum. The campaigns are usually very similar. It's just a lot slower at 60 days. So 30 is just a good average that seems to work well for most projects.
And I would also say, take a look at when major holidays are coming up. I'm literally talking to someone and I'm like, do you know that if you launch your campaign, you're going to end on July 4th? And the end is spike is what, you know, when a lot of people sort of get pushes them over the edge, and no one is going to be pledging on July 4th. So, you know, take a look at the calendar, and they actually extended their campaign to like, you know, before they launched, you can't extend it once it's launched, but they decided to do like 37 days because they wanted to launch. Lightning round. I can't see you, sorry.
I was just going to ask, what's the best time of year to launch a Kickstarter campaign?
There is no best time of year for a campaign. You know, we get that question a lot, but it also just depends on, there's so many different types of projects. So really, like, get a cool project and get it out there, and, you know, that's the number one thing. I don't know, James, you.
Yeah, no, same answer.
Any other? Yes?
If you have one aspect of a comic, say like a script or character designs or whatever, and you're starting up the Kickstarter, is it a good idea to have an artist in mind already?
I would highly recommend having your whole team assembled before starting
a
Kickstarter.
Sometimes I've noticed, like, when some of the ones have failed, it's more like part of the Kickstarter amount that you go to paying the artist for their time.
Oh, well, you definitely want to, I mean, I did that, you know, like, you want to pay people, if at all possible, I think everybody should be paid, you know what I mean, but what folks are looking for when they are backing is this, there's an immediate trust sense that people are going to develop in about 30 seconds. Will this project actually get made, and are they going to give me this thing? And so if you have your artists already lined up and committed, then they know, okay, well, and also then you can show art, and art is what's going to sell your project. So, that's part of the setup. I mean, you know, hopefully, you, like what we did is we worked a deal with the art, like we paid the artist for the concept art, and then we figured out what the page rates were going to be if we got funded, you know what I mean? But so we paid them up front to do the work that was necessary to launch the Kickstarter, and then we didn't have to pay them more until we actually got the money, you know what I'm saying? So there are ways to do it.
Okay, we're out of time, so I just want to say that you guys are all awesome. You guys are all.